I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Dragoncast. Home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond.
Welcome, welcome everybody to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. I'm Jamie East.
And I am Chris Mandel.
He certainly is. Let's get into it. Second episode of the week after a slightly shell-shocked Sound of Succession episode on Monday.
Yeah.
Which I kind of feel as though we could almost record another episode about that episode.
Literally.
As soon as we finished recording, I was like, oh my God, I didn't mention this. I didn't talk about that. And, you know, and oh, goodness me.
What? And I think like we recorded quite soon after we'd seen it.
Yeah.
And I think the last 24 hours has been really interesting watching the episode continue to send shockwaves across the internet. And which is why you were on television.
Touch me. I'm just famous. Literally, if anyone watching on YouTube will still see the remnants of Jeremy Vine's magic dust all over me.
Yeah.
You're
covered in it.
I'm drowning in it. I was invited to go on because I was so angry about spoilers. It's an interesting one. I mean, it's relevant to this. You know, we're not going to spoil episode 3 of this Succession. Latest episode of Succession. Don't panic. But it's relevant to our interests. Spoilers, Chris. Where do you stand on spoilers?
I'm glad you asked because I saw you talking about this on Twitter.
Yeah.
And
people I like and respect, I have now got different feelings about.
Well, what I think is interesting is that even within the space of people like who work like us, who work in the medium of television, even we have very diverging views on spoilers. And you were on television talking about how ridiculous it is and how easy it is to get things spoiled very early on in, you know, like Succession, for example. And it's the same for House of the Dragon. They're the Sunday night slot in America. We tend to watch it Monday mornings. It's on Monday evenings, but it's a gauntlet. It's a gauntlet to try and avoid information. So my view, I have a slightly different view to you. I'm a little bit keep the peace about this, generally.
I think that sums up our dynamic.
Classic youngest in the family, doesn't like
Why
any...
Why can't we all just get along?
Yeah. I'll tell you what I think about it. First of all, I should have phoned in on Jeremy Vine, shouldn't I, really?
Yeah.
Chris, 30, from Carlisle. So what I would say is, first of all, on Monday morning, I woke up at 5 in the morning, just couldn't sleep, went to the bathroom, had a glass of water. I looked on my phone at 5:30 in the morning, and everybody that I follow on Twitter that is based in America was just saying what an amazing episode it was.
Nobody
told me what happened, but I saw that as people saying that is one of the greatest episodes of television I've ever seen, or this will go down as a legendary episode of television, or I am so grateful I watched this as it happened live.
Yeah.
And the other thing that people shared a lot of was very no context images or quotes from the show. So the one that I saw was three characters hugging one another.
Yeah. Which now, I think HBO had used as their official kind of thumbnail for the episode, right?
Yeah. And I just think, so what I would say is there's a definitely worth separating people that go online and say, oh my God, I can't believe Ned Stark got his head chopped off. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
Those people really do need to learn. And I think it's interesting that people are still behaving like that on social media, but they need to learn that, like, these conversations reverberate.
It's just
out.
A dick move. It's just a dick move, and there's no other word for it.
Yeah. What I would also say, though, is that I inferred very quickly at 5:30 in the morning what was probably going to happen in that episode.
Yeah. But that's I think that's okay too. That's you joining the dots because you're a passionate and detailed watcher of the show. A more casual viewer of the show might have just skimmed over that and gone, oh dear, bad's happened.
Your brain does work very fast to connect the dots
when
you are looking for ways to connect the dots. But I would also say, you know, it still kind of spoils what might happen. I thought it was really clear, actually, by that point, what was probably going to happen in the episode. And so what I think about spoilers generally is it's really good to not go in and know what's happening. It's not inevitable that you're going to go in and not know what's going to happen. And I think I kind of went in thinking I knew what was going to happen, but knowing and experiencing it are very different things.
Yes.
And
I
found on our Game of Thrones rewatch, even knowing what's happening doesn't take away the witnessing it happening. And so that's kind of where I'm at. I think I try and keep a lot of my thoughts for the podcast now, because if I sort of say, oh my God, Sarah Snook should win an Emmy for that, someone will go, well, what? Is she reacting dramatically to someone dying? Is that what you're saying? You know, it can be very, very easy to sort of push the conversation even without meaning to. So
100%. Yeah,
the other thing, the final thing I would say, listen, I grew up watching Coronation Street. They tell you what happens on that show months in advance. If the tram's going to kill a load of people, if there's going to be a gas leak in the pub.
Because they need the publicity.
Yeah. And they don't stop production. But I think it's interesting that soaps and the soap genre is spoiler. It's like bombs falling out of the sky. Like, that's the whole point. You're supposed to, you know that, you know, Rita's going to get killed. And you tune in to see what that looks like. And I think it wouldn't be the worst thing. Particularly with House of the Dragon, like, we know some stuff about that show because it's literally been mentioned in Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that that's going to spoil it for me.
No, I agree. But there's, I mean, that's literally, that's an unavoidable spoiler. You know, but here's my take on it, right?
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. But on top, there's a layer on top of that. The people that spoil things are just cunts. There's no other word for it. They're just it's either lazy journalism or peacocking. It's just people who want to go, oh, rah, 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 rah. It's nasty and it's selfish. It's not their decision to go, well, it doesn't spoil it for you. It just changes the experience. No, I'll be the judge of that, thanks very much. I'll decide if that's how I want to proceed. It's not up to you to take that pleasure away from me and then call me a twat for moaning about it. It's just not.
Yeah.
You know, I also agree that it's problematic because of airing in the States at 2 a.m. UK time. That is difficult. It is difficult to avoid it. I avoided Twitter, got up from bed, walked from my bed to the television. By the time I got to the television, I stupidly kind of opened Instagram and seeing the LA Times title. And I was just like, for fuck's sake. You know, and there's also a million miles of difference between some fucking twat on Twitter going, oh my God, I can't believe blah, 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 and the Daily Mail or the LA Times putting it on their front page or putting it on Twitter saying, literally in the headline. There's no journalistic need for it. In fact, I would argue it's better to tease what's in your article. The word clickbait is there for a reason. And this is definitely one example when clickbait is necessary. And I also think that you can't expect in something like Succession, if you're not on duty with a series, like we are with Succession or with people are with House of the Dragon or anything like that, when it's hot, when it's live, when it's current, I would argue that if you've not watched that episode by the time the next episode comes out, that's your fault.
Yeah. I think we have to treat the stuff we consume, because we're all watching things non-linearly now. Yeah. You know, everyone is watching a different combination of five different shows and whatever. Yeah. It is your responsibility to manage that. I mean, I do say that having, I think, was it last week when I ruined a huge death on The Sopranos for one of our listeners?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I was mortified because I was like...
But it's what do you do? It's like, I think you can keep manners in your mind when you... It's like, I wouldn't talk about the ending of Breaking Bad. Just blurt out the ending of it. I just wouldn't do it. I don't think.
Just out of
politeness for fellow TV fans. I get that, you're going to see them. If you're interested in The Sopranos and you start Googling about it and you're on season two, you're going to have it spoiled for you. But there's nothing you can really do about that because it's so fucking old. White Lotus, I would say now, too late. Yeah,
I do think as well, though, what's interesting about it is I think we're very well trained to know when to look away.
Yeah.
And one of the things that made this such a shock was, we thought what might happen in this episode would happen by the end and maybe happens in the penultimate episode. Because that's what Game of Thrones taught us to do. It's not that we don't think people are going to die. It's that it happens on the third episode. It's really what I love about it is that we have really been trained not to expect that. And so that's where a lot of this kickback is coming from, was I wasn't prepared to look the other way. It's Bank Holiday Monday. It's episode three. I still haven't got into it yet.
Yeah.
You get very good. I think people were talking online about we'll just mute it, mute the hashtag, mute the this. But the thing is, let's say, and I'm going to use hypotheticals in case people haven't watched the show. Let's say there's a character called Sarah on Succession who dies. Mm-hmm. And this character is sixth or seventh down on the call sheet. You can mute as many hashtags as you like, but Rip Sarah will be trending.
Yeah.
Rip Sarah Smith, right? And you just go, well, I didn't know to mute that. I didn't know to protect myself from that. And so I think it's a very interesting conversation when people say you have to inoculate yourself, because you're like, I don't know what germs are going to be flying my way.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what it brings me back to, manners. There are plenty of safe spaces for people to discuss spoilers on shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can have a Twitter circle. Yeah. You can have a Facebook group. You can have a podcast. There are plenty of places for you to discuss that thing that happened with people that they're watching it.
I also think it would be wise to say, I think some outlets, the LA Times one was absolutely ridiculous. I thought kind of funny, but also that was a dick move. I saw a lot of outlets that were covering this episode before I watched it, and I didn't feel like they were really shoving it in your face. And right. I thought there were places, there's some great interviews out there. Mm-hmm. GQ has an interview with Mark Mylod, who directed the episode.
That's really
cool. Vulture's done nine articles. Vox have done some amazing stuff. So those guys have been really good at managing.
They're dancing around it. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, Mark Mylod, who directed that episode of Succession, directed the episode of Game of Thrones that we are talking about on the podcast.
So hey, look at that. That's called synergy.
Yeah, I think it was that one. We have a couple of other things to talk about, don't we?
We do. Well, great news. So in between the last Dragoncast and this one, Dragoncast has been an honoree at the Webby Awards, which is woohoo! Which when I got the email through, I was like, oh, great. Oh, fuck. What an honoree means is we didn't quite make the shortlist, but we were still honoured. And I was a bit I feel like the guy bottom left on the Oscars who just the pan zoom just passes But then realised actually what a big deal the Webbies are. They're
huge. Massive.
Fallon was talking about it on the telly, about them being nominated. So, and we were up against, we were up against the official House of the Dragon podcast. We were up against a Disney one, another HBO one, a Time Warner one. You know, we were the we were by a country mile, the small, like smallest by, as in independent, little olders, mm-hmm. chatting in our respective houses podcast. All the others were...
like conglomerates.
Conglomerates. So,
yeah,
amazing. So,
yeah,
congratulations, Chris.
Congratulations, Jamie East. It was such a surprise and so gratifying to be shorter than the long list and longer than the short list.
Exactly.
We're in that lovely, lovely little bit in the middle.
Yeah.
What a nice thing to just be told that the work you're doing is resonating and that it 100%, matters. And people 100%. Like it. It really helps. So that's fantastic. I noticed
I've been
you
saying,
updated.
Like, the past couple of weeks, it's like the ratio of feedback that we get on each episode and listeners getting in touch is so gratifying. And I've never experienced it on any of the podcasts I've ever done before. And just getting little nuggets like that really warms the cockles of our heart.
It really does. And it melts our cold, cold hearts.
100%. 100%.
Very hard to do. So congratulations, us. And the other thing I wanted to talk about before we get into Game of Thrones is there's a couple of stories about House of the Dragon rounds.
Exciting.
The first thing is they're officially in production.
I know. My mate Dan, who does all of the behind-the-scenes filming, Dan Story. Hello, Dan, if you're listening. Did his first selfie from Leavesden Warner Brothers Studios outside the sign. There was a kind of like slightly nondescript photograph of the back of the throne that came out.
Excellent. Why? Odd shot, I thought. Is there like a Westeros janitor that's sort of sweeping behind it, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it was like probably just the safest shot that they could show. Yeah, it was just kind of
getting
like...
the Dettol on there just to clean it before they start.
Yeah, it showed a bit behind the scenes for you.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought that was worth talking about very quickly is the news that came out that the second series is only going to be 8 episodes and not 10.
Yes.
Which I meant to bring up last week and I forgot.
I know, same. We kind of got waylaid by that. So... thoughts?
Well, you know, historically,
I think people are like, oh my god, it's in trouble already. I did not think that.
Yeah, so here's what I think. I think, you know, Barry, Succession, both doing 4 seasons. I think safe to say House of the Dragon's going to do 4. And the best way to do that is to shorten 2 and 3 and maybe go back to 10 for the final season or just, it seems like a pacing thing more than anything.
I think, sorry, Karen.
No, that was it.
I think you're right. I think I don't know if it was particularly to eke it out so much as to work out what the bookmarks are for each season. I've not read the book. It's literally blinking at me as I speak from a bookcase. I know kind of the heartbeats of things that can happen. I think the big thing that they were looking to do in season 2 while they were making season 1 was something called Blood and Cheese. Which I think is some kind of crazy Red Wedding horror show. From what I've read, it sounds like they may have stretched... There's a battle and this Blood and Cheese thing that were both going to happen in season 2. And I think what they've decided to do is to make the most of one thing, they've pushed the other thing to season 3. Which makes perfect narrative sense. And from a, you know, from a spectacle point of view, from a budgetary point of view, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think like it's a smaller story. It is more contained.
Yeah.
And it's good. I think it's good to kind of not reinvent the wheel exactly, but just constantly recalibrate what you're doing on a show like this. And if it doesn't need to be 10 episodes a season, then just don't do them because, you know, I think
you'll only get slagged off for kind of like, oh, that was boring. Nothing happened.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. Or they're treading water. And I think I think it's going to be pacing. I think from what we sort of gleaned working on season 1 of Dragoncast is that a lot of this first season was set up. So I think the acceleration is going to be quite rapid.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to learn a better way of doing that. The other thing is if they're doing 8 rather than 10, you have to assume this third season will take less time to do than the second season. If they're writing less scripts, they can maybe sort of double up on things. So it's just about how can we be a bit more lean with it, which is going to be great. So I'm really excited. Yeah.
It's just something to look forward to, isn't it? It's happening. It's like, as we record right now, someone is in makeup, someone is in front of a camera, the scripts are finished.
Yeah.
It's in motion. The wheels are in motion, which is a good feeling.
Really excited. It'll come round before you know it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
100%. And one thing we also haven't mentioned before, sorry, apologies, we're like eking this episode out. Should we? Are we allowed to talk about it? It's a little bit starfuckery. It's a little bit name droppery. But when we were like, whilst we're talking about prepping for House of the Dragon, when Chris and I were at the premiere for Succession, should I say this? Why the fuck not? We hung out with some of the cast of Game of Thrones, of House of the Dragon, which was quite thrilling. I have to confess, I almost had one of my most horrific celebrity encounters ever. Like, it was one of my most excruciating moments ever. We're in the queue to go in to the screening, and Chris and I think we'd been split up, hadn't we?
Yeah.
And
people try and do that because the energy is just off the charts otherwise. So yeah, we often get.
And so I was just like wandering around, and I looked and I thought, hang on a second, that's Millie Oldcock there, who plays young Rhaenyra. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then I was like, oh, fucking hell, there's Fabian Frankel, who's the guy who plays Sir Criston Cole. Mm-hmm. And just as I was looking at them both, bear in mind I'd recorded the premiere special of House of the Dragon for Sky Atlantic, and in my mind I was like, there's my mates. Mm-hmm. There's my pals. They'll remember me. Without, like, I'm the main character, obviously, without thinking they've travelled the world on this show, and that already on that day was like their 30th interview. So anyway, Fabian caught my eye. I just went, mate, how you doing? And he was like, and he did the awful thing where he looked behind him and then he went, who, me? And I was like,
oh no.
Yeah, don't worry. I interviewed you. Don't panic. He was like, oh yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, hi. Hey. Like, I knew instantly he had not got a fucking
it's
clue.
It's you.
Who I, and he went, oh yeah, man, in LA, right? And I didn't have the, I just thought, I've got to end this now. And I went, yeah, good to see you, mate. And just carried on walking. Like, literally, my balls were in my stomach. I was like, please, dear God, please, dear God, let no one else have heard that. So then the worst thing was they were on the row in front of me. Like, Millie and Fabian were sat next to each other. And then I looked over and there, Emma Darcy was there. And they thankfully didn't catch my eye because I was already done for. I was a husk of a man by that point. But then we finished. You and I were wandering around outside, and walked slap bang into all three of them. Stood outside the British Museum, all smoking their fags. And Fabian came over to me. Thankfully, thank fuck. And he was like, "Hey man, I'm so sorry. I didn't." And I was like, "Look, it's my fault. I just have to say, we didn't meet in LA, though." And he went, I know. We met in the premiere. He remembered me. I am someone. I matter to a celebrity. Part of their universe. And Millie Oldcock was like, "Oh, mate, how you doing?" And then because you'd interviewed Emma and you had a hug, you hugged?
Two hugs. Listen, two hugs. It's really dangerous in my line of work to try and think you're friends with any of these people.
I do it constantly. Mate, I am friends with all of
them.
Hey, Paddy, hope you're listening, mate.
Love you, Paddy. When I interviewed Emma for GQ, I did it twice. And it was to do with, like, one was a profile for the magazine and one was like a Q&A to tie into the final episode of season one. And between those two interviews, I bumped into Emma in Soho in the summer.
Oh, God.
And Emma was with another actor who I won't name just because, you know,
Tom Cruise.
They were walking through Soho and I'd interviewed this actor as well for something else. And I just clocked eyes with them walking down the street. And I was just like, hey, guys, bounded over to them, gave them each a hug. And I was like, how's it going? And they were both like, we're good. We're just both about to start work on this film. And I was like, oh, well, I just said to them, I'd just done Paddy.
Get on IMDb, listeners. Find out what Emma Darcy films are in and what actor she's
there in. Literally had a quick chat and I was like, listen, I'll let you go. I got to get home and do some work, so bye. And then I went on the train home and I thought, God, what a tit. Like, what a tit.
Absolutely not. You know, I will not
anyway,
have that. You were not
fast forward. Fast forward to the end of the year and I was at a party, a glitzy party in Knightsbridge. Oh. I bump into the actor at the party and I was like, hey man, was I like a massive knobhead when I came over and said hi? And he goes, no, Emma and I both said It's so friendly. You're such a nice person, and we both really enjoyed the piece.
Oh, look at that!
So it's because of that that when I saw Emma at the Succession thing, I just was like, look, I just want to say hello quickly. It's great to see you. How are you doing? And that's kind of the bulk of it. But Emma is like such a superstar.
You should have gone all in.
Well, gone I got a in. Hug. We chatted about.
Do you want to exchange? Should we swap numbers? I think you're at number swapping stage now. Come on.
Kind of think I could probably get away with that. But no, I mean, this is the thing. I think there's a new generation of actors that are incredibly private.
Yeah.
And that are incredibly resistant to that. And the thing about Emma that I love is that they constantly have a different hairstyle. And
yes,
I literally
they looked amazing.
It's walked like, past Emma like twice and I said to them, like, it was sort of like a grey blue. And I was like, I thought you were doing red. Last time I saw you, it was red. You know, before that, it was kind of like blonde. And they were just like, yeah, I just sort of... And they really do blend in. And I think the kind of... It's kind of amazing that you have this really like vivid platinum-haired Targaryen. And then IRL, it's very, very hard to find Emma in a crowd. Yeah. So
amazing.
That was very gratifying. And like I said, I sort of... you do have to be careful.
Listeners, what you're taking away from this is that... Chris is implying that celebrities like him more than me, which is quite rude, I think.
If any
even though I made a career, even though I built a career on being nasty to celebrities, I've changed. That was in my drinking days. I'm clean. I'm sober. I'm friendly. I'm wholesome. I'm just part of the gang.
Mm-hmm. What I find, I just say really quickly that because Rob, my partner, he works in the music industry.
He knows famous people. Who's the most famous person Rob could phone up right now?
Billie Eilish.
Fuck a duck. I was not expecting that. I was thinking maybe fucking Olivia Rodriguez had a push.
I think he's got her number.
That's impressive. Who's the most famous person you could phone up right now?
Probably Paddy. I have Paddy's number.
That's good. That's
good. Or, I have Rupert Grint's number, I think.
Oh, here he is. Look at them.
But what I was going to say with Rob is that...
Do you ever, because you still drink, have there ever been drunk Chris moments where you've been scrolling through the contacts and you've gone, like, intrusive thoughts have kind of, like, entered your mind where it's just like, should I phone Rupert up?
Do you know what I actually do? I have a new one. Timothy Chalamet. I have one of his numbers.
What?
On my phone because I interviewed him about five years
ago. How
many
numbers does Timothy Chalamet have?
Well, the reason I say one of is that, like... didn't say this. I deleted it from my phone because I did.
You were scared.
I did call it, like.
Oh no! I'm horrified for you.
No. So basically, I'm gonna have to. I feel like we're eating up so much time today.
No. This is fuck Game of Thrones. Give me Chalamet, Goss.
This is valid. Okay. So when I worked at Shortlist, we did Timothy Chalamet for a cover, and we did him quite early, like before he was. He's quite elusive now. He doesn't do a lot. We shot him in London when he was over for the BAFTAs.
Yeah.
And we had to get the interview done in like a really tight time frame. And his publicist was really good about getting a shoot time. We spent about an hour shooting him, but we had to do the interview on the phone.
Right.
So a few days later, he's back in New York and he calls me at like 11 p.m. or midnight because of the time difference.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a bit earlier. Maybe it was about 8 or 9. Calls me and we do 20 minutes and he's like, hey man, I've really got to go. Can I call you back? And I was like, why do you have to go? I thought we were doing an interview. He was like, I've got like a doctor's appointment. So he went.
Blimey.
He was like, I'll call you back. and he kind of hangs up. So I'm at home on a Saturday night. It's like 9 o'clock. And I'm thinking like, when is he going to call back?
Yeah.
Gets to like 10, 11, 12, and I text the number to be like, hey, like, what time are you calling back? Because there's no middle person organizing this.
Got you. Right, okay, I see, yeah.
So I'm just like, hey, man, you gonna get back to me?
Yeah, please.
And at one point, at like 12:30, I'm getting tired.
Yeah.
And it's getting sleepy. And
precisely. Yeah.
I'm like, when is this, you know, I what do I do? So I called. Just to be like, I'm just going to call him to sort of see if he answers.
No.
And I'm like, hey, you know, and he didn't.
Oh, no.
But then he called me back within 5 minutes to be like, I'm sorry. And basically the delay was because when you sign on to like big studio projects, you have to get like a a complete health check.
Yeah, well, you do with any kind of like TV series. Yeah.
Yeah. So any like they have to make sure you're physically fit. So he'd been doing that. So he was like, I'm really sorry, it took ages. I was in this health clinic for like hours.
Wow.
And I just remember thinking like, I should just get rid of this number because it's clearly not his permanent number. That was my feeling. Like,
but
so I got rid
you didn't.
Of it. Well, I do. I've got rid of it now.
Oh, have you? Oh,
yeah. Because it was
going
like,
to do like a Michael McIntyre on you.
No. Oh my God, no. I was probably giving it to his grandma or something. You know, it's like an old
exactly.
SIM card.
It's just it's a burner phone. It's a burner for his
that
drugs.
That is my story. It's my story about that. So
that's amazing.
But what was the point I was going to make?
Yes, sorry.
Because with Rob, like, we go and see his artists, we hang out with them sometimes, we go to gigs, we go and chill out with them at Glastonbury or whatever. You do get very used to just pretending they're not famous. And that is so much easier to go up to someone that you've interviewed and just say, how are you? Like, how's things? Like, and not be sort of, because I think sometimes you can go in as a journalist to be like, what can you tell me about the new series?
Yeah.
But
you
learn to just go, look, they're just people and they're at the same thing you're at. And it's like, oh yeah, you know.
God. Goodness gracious me. We've done half an hour already and we haven't even talked about the reason we're here. Before we get sidetracked with actually trying to text Billie Eilish, here is a 5-minute recap from our sister podcast previously on, all about season 7 episode 4, The Spoils of War.
The Lannister army approaches King's Landing after successfully capturing Highgarden. The caravan brings the Tyrell gold inside the city, but not before Jaime seizes a large bag of it for Bronn, who insists he still wants the castle he was promised all that time ago. Cersei informs Tycho Nestoris that she will use the gold to repay the Lannister debt to the Iron Bank. They discuss a possible loan that would allow Cersei to hire mercenaries from Essos to bolster her armies. At Winterfell, Littlefinger gives Bran the Valyrian steel dagger that was used to try and kill him as a child. When Littlefinger tries to suck up to him, Bran says, "Chaos is a ladder," quoting words Littlefinger uttered to Varys in private a long time ago. It completely freaks Littlefinger out, and he realises that Bran could somehow know about all his shady dealings. Mira says her goodbyes to Bran as she wants to be with her family when the White Walkers come, and is frustrated by Bran's indifference to her. She says the real Bran died when he became the Three-Eyed Raven. Arya arrives at Winterfell and demands to see Sansa, but the guards don't believe she's really Arya Stark. As they argue over whether they should let her in, she sneaks into the castle and reunites with her sister at their father's tomb. Sansa brings Arya to see Bran in the Godswood, and he tells her he has seen her in visions and knows all about her kill list, and then gives her the Valyrian steel dagger. Later, Arya watches Brienne sparring with Podrick and asks if she can train with her. Brienne agrees, but initially underestimates Arya's martial prowess. Sansa and Littlefinger watch amused as the two adversaries fight to a draw, impressing each other with their skills. At Dragonstone, Jon takes Daenerys and Missandei to see the Dragonglass Mine and shows them cave paintings made by the Children of the Forest. The paintings depict the Children and the First Men fighting the White Walkers together. Seeing this, Daenerys offers to fight for the North if Jon swears loyalty to her, but he insists that his people won't accept a southern ruler. Tyrion and Varys break the news to Daenerys that they've lost Highgarden and Casterly Rock to the Lannisters. Daenerys considers ransacking King's Landing and asks for Jon's advice. He says that if she destroys the city, she'll just be seen as another tyrant like Cersei. Davos notices that Jon seems slightly attracted to Daenerys and asks him what he thinks of her. Jon says there's no time to think about such things during a war, oh no. The Greyjoy survivors arrive at Dragonstone and Jon confronts Theon for betraying Robb, but spares his life because he saved Sansa's. The Lannister caravan is bringing food from Highgarden through Blackwater Rush when it's attacked by the Dothraki horde. Daenerys rides Drogon into battle as he incinerates the Lannister armies. Jaime orders the archers to fire at Daenerys, hoping to knock her off the dragon, but is attacked by a Dothraki soldier and saved at the last minute by Dickon Tarly. Bronn abandons his gold and makes his way towards Qyburn's Scorpion, which is that giant dragon-killing crossbow we mentioned before. He manages to hit Drogon, but Drogon destroys the scorpion before Bronn can land a second blow. Daenerys gets off Drogon and tries to remove the bolt from him. The battle is well and truly lost for the Lannisters, but Jaime sees Daenerys nearby and charges towards her on his horse. As he gets close, Drogon notices and breathes fire. Jaime's tackled off his horse by Bronn at the last minute and they both fall into the river, with Jaime's armour sinking him to the bottom.
We got there in the end. Here we are. First episode of season 7. The ones that were chosen were kind of fitted the pattern of our Game of Thrones rewatch. We've got like a middling episode and then the final two. So season 7, episode 4, Spoils of War is now. Then we've got, oh my God, what's it called? Episode 6 is...
Beyond the Wall.
Beyond the Wall, your favourite episode ever. And episode 7, The Dragon and the Wolf. I can't remember. Always difficult to jump kind of midway into a season. So much has happened, although nothing that major. A lot of positioning.
This is what I thought. I couldn't believe Arya only just got to Winterfell. I was like, what have you been doing for 3 episodes? What have you been doing? I know what she's been doing. Chatting to Ed Sheeran in the premiere. Do you remember that?
I missed that. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm so glad. But, you know, the fucking hate that people had for that scene, including me. I think it's awful that people just plonk Ed Sheeran in.
It was because she fancied Ed Sheeran. It was her. You know, she orchestrated that.
I've got no problem with, like, getting your face muddy, put a big wig on. Yeah. Sophie Ellis-Bextor being an extra. Yeah. What I don't want is Ed Sheeran looking like Ed Sheeran.
Singing like Ed Sheeran.
A song about Casterly Rock.
He may as well have got a loop pedal out. Yeah.
I know. Anyway, so he's not in this episode. So yeah, a lot of it felt to me like we kind of started at a really good point because I mean, I'd love to have seen some of the earlier bits, but a lot of this is set up. So we got, Arya arrives. Okay, let's go from the start.
So Littlefinger, brilliant scene with Littlefinger. One of the best weird Bran scenes ever. Littlefinger met with Bran and was yakking to him and gave him the cat's paw dagger. And this for me was my favourite bit of the whole episode, was like the cat's paw dagger's kind of like heartbeat through it all.
And just that
brilliant moment where Littlefinger's trying his usual schmooze and kind of like suck up and charm to basically someone that's been lobotomised and been replaced by a ghost.
ChatGPT. CBT.
It's ChatGPT.
AI.
Brand, isn't it? Yeah. The hands just aren't right. And who just throws back a quote that Littlefinger said to Varys, like, God knows how long ago.
Season three, in private.
And he just went, Chaos is a ladder. And like, Littlefinger was just like, what the living fuck are you? And was just like, I'm gonna leave now. You are a strange motherfucker.
Freaked him out, didn't it? I mean, it's interesting, right? Like, you know, I remember Isaac Hempstead Wright saying that Bran can't control these powers very well. Like, he hasn't learned all of the stuff that's happening, that he's just constantly seeing all these things. And I had this theory watching it that certain phrases will give him, like, almost like
Tourette's, like a tick.
No, not Tourette's. Like, what's that thing called when you, like...
Synthesia?
Like, no, when someone says something and you think you've experienced it before.
Deja vu?
Yeah. I've forgotten the word deja vu.
It's award-winning journalist Chris Mandel here, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, the joke writes itself. Like, what's that thing called when you remember something? I can't remember it. So I think what's happening is that whenever something like that comes up, he's kind of triggered as like, oh, I think I saw that like once.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because it just really freaked Littlefinger out, didn't it?
Yeah.
But I think his idea was, this is a new, he's going to be the heir to Winterfell if he's the male Stark. I should align with him because Sansa doesn't seem to like me anymore. Yeah. After I gave her my army and most of them died. Yeah. She doesn't need me anymore.
She's still not forgiven me. Yeah.
She still doesn't seem to be over the Ramsay thing. So it's interesting just how quickly he was like, oh God, don't like this guy. Yeah. And then with Arya and Sansa, he's kind of realised that those two reunited is not good for him either.
It was the first time like Littlefinger realises it's the beginning of the end for Littlefinger now. He's just screwed and he kind of knows it. Hold on to your horses, sit yourselves down, don't go anywhere. We're heading off for a quick word from our sponsor. See you in a tick.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
I do like this season, I will say. Like, the thing that works so well about this point in the show is all of these new combinations of people.
Yes.
So, like, Bran, Sansa, Arya, Littlefinger, it's like a sort of, like, family drama. And yeah. It's sort of, like, yeah, it's really good.
I just found all of the Stark reunions just so lovely because it really felt gratifying. It was like really waited for this, really looked forward to this. And it was just nice moments. And I think Arya and Sansa meeting in the crypt was really nice as well because it was like, oh, yeah. My God.
You know, kind of mirrored Robert and Ned going there in the pilot, you know.
Yes, that's right.
And pay their respects.
And you just realised how long it is since they, if you were there, how long it is since they've actually seen each other. And you think,
yeah.
Bran is like a man, and he was just like about
a tiny like, little baby when he
fucking
left.
2 foot tall in his stocking feet, like last time anyone else saw him. And that must be just really weird, just that awkwardness, you know. I mean, it's awkward enough like when you see a cousin that you've not seen for like 3 or 4 years, it's like, you know, but like your own kind of siblings. And I love the kind of like comparison of battle scars or the hinted at battle scars of Sansa and Arya just going, pretty shit journey to get here, right? And it's like, you wouldn't fucking know the half of it. I lost my face. I was blind. Yeah, I got raped. You know,
I would love though, because they're just like, you know, what were they saying? Like, I thought you were dead, and it was like, I thought you were dead, and it was like, I'd love one of them to just go, so what happened?
Yeah.
So where have you been?
Let's get a cup of tea. Sit down. So like, did you see Dad get killed or what? It's like, no.
So you were at the statue. Because did Sansa know Arya was on the statue? No.
No.
Probably not. And then Sansa's probably like, where have you been?
Yeah, exactly. Were you in King's Landing all that time?
Yeah. Why didn't you like come and help me? But yeah, I'd love them to just sit and talk. But obviously it's a waste of time for them to talk about stuff we already know about, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought that was really fascinating. And, you know, even with Bran, they're sort of like, he went north of the wall for a while,
yeah.
Came back, seems to have begun, middled, and completed puberty.
Yeah.
And is that why he can see? Like, he has visions? A bit like,
it was just kind of, oh, he has visions now. Okay. It's like, yeah. At least Arya had the decency to be a bit freaked out by a weird brother.
Yeah, he remembered Arya being at the Crossroads Inn.
That was it, yes.
And she was going to go to... He was like, you almost went to King's Landing. And he was like, I know. And The Crossroads Inn is where Sansa's wolf was killed in the second episode. Micah was killed. You know, when they all go south, that's where that is. So I think it's a really interesting, you know, it could have been anywhere, but that's a big cross between, you know, going south to King's Landing and going north to Winterfell. And he said, he mentions her kill list, or he mentions her list.
That's it, yeah, which Sansa hadn't really believed. She just thought it was just Arya just being twee and a bit daft. And it was like,
they do this fake laugh, don't they? Which she's like,
and there is actually a kill list, yeah. Poor Mira got absolutely fucking cock-blocked by Bran on an extraordinary level. It's like, mate, I know you're a three-eyed raven. You can at least show a bit of gratitude. You're not a complete dick. I thought that was really bad. She was horrified by it.
It is, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking, but also it's crazy. Like, Mira's been on the show since season three, and I'm a bit like, so what's your deal? I don't really know. They definitely feel like they didn't know what she was there for. And I think, you know, we never saw her father, her and Jojen's father, Howland Reed, who was one of the men at the Tower of Joy with Ned. This
right.
is a very important character that a lot of book readers think is integral to, like, a lot of stuff that's not come out yet. So, you know, Vermeer to go, just going to go back to... And where does she live? Like, the Neck or something?
She's just kind of like, look, you know, the Long Night's coming... I need to be with my family. Shit's gonna go down.
They're gonna wonder why I bothered going all that way and coming all the way back. I haven't got anything
without my
for
brother.
Them.
Yeah,
yeah. Didn't bring any presents.
I went to the wall and back, and all I brought back was no brother. Yeah,
this lousy dead brother.
This lousy dead brother.
So yeah, but that she says to Bran, "You died in that cave."
Yeah, which is a fair point.
Is a fair point. He's not a good friend, really. She must be absolutely ripped, though, after dragging him all that way back.
They've got just unboundless energy.
Mira's got Popeye arms.
Yeah, precisely. They did. Arya and Sansa did, like, compare. They were just like, did you kill Joffrey? No, I wish I had.
That was good.
That was quite good. But, yeah, there was never really a kind of, like, there's no real debrief. All the debriefs go off, happen off camera.
And it's one of the things I hated when I watched it was that they weren't, like... It was all quite petty this season, that they sort of don't trust each other. We haven't seen it quite yet, but it's like, and at the time I remember being like, oh, guys, just move forward. But actually, this is what siblings are like. And I think what does work on a rewatch is that it feels like a family conflict.
Yeah,
that they don't believe each other. They don't believe, she can't believe that Sansa survived without compromising herself. And she thinks Arya's just ducked out of all of the hardships and has just come back with like a real kind of stiff moral compass. And it's like, so it's, I love how irreconcilable the two of them are later in the season, which we'll presumably see. Yeah. But it's just great having them back. And there's a great scene where they push Bran through the courtyard and it's just like Brienne and Podrick see them and it's like, you could almost hear like the Friends theme playing, you know, they're sort of back together.
It was like no time, nothing's changed, you know, you're still, and that's,
weird
sibling connection.
Did you see the little shout out to one of the guards at Winterfell that won't let Arya in?
Yeah, so go on.
It's Joseph Quinn, who's in Stranger Things.
That's who I fucking, who was... To circle the whole thing back at the fucking Succession premiere, having a fag with Millie Alcock.
Listen, isn't that amazing that he was just the guard?
I knew I'd seen him somewhere. He was just like randomly the guard.
And he's like now like heartthrob numero uno in Stranger Things. Cool. So I loved that. And I also just loved, just to quickly, the small detail where Arya's like, just get Maester Roderick, just get this guy. They're like, all those people died.
Yeah,
and they're like, you can't name any of the people that work here. And she's like, look, it has been like
it's
5 years.
Been a while, guys. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's been,
password.
Been fucking... Also, if I was Arya, I'd be like, look, you guys just moved back in. You're having a go at me for not knowing who the fucking, you know, department store manager is in this place. Like,
yeah,
you
precise.
Just got here.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
exactly.
Update the directory.
Nice moment with Brienne and Pod. And I loved the kind of the little kind of like swashbuckling kind of face-off between Brienne and Arya, I thought was fantastic. So good. And obviously, huge foreshadowing there to The Long Night. That was where she first showed her move that ends up killing the Night King.
Yeah, she does the thing where she drops the dagger.
Yeah, exactly. Drops it into the other hand. And
it's such a brilliant choreographed scene. And Brienne has been in a couple now, that one with the Hound in season 4. I loved how it took advantage of the fact that they were completely opposite heights.
It was just so...
And, you know, she says like, oh, you can't use that sword, my lady. And she's like, I'll try not to cut you. And it's just all very like...
It's great.
Arya sort of has come out of the wilderness and, you know, we have Littlefinger and Sansa watching as our sort of proxy going, oh my God, this woman is a relentless ninja. Like,
yeah, she's actually all of nails. What the hell happened? Yeah.
And the reason she's able to sort of get one over on Brienne is that Brienne's trained, you know, get your armor, get your big sword, and it's quite a brutal, like, fighting style. Arya's learnt this water dancing that Cirio Forel started teaching her.
Yeah.
She's also working like an assassin, and it's all just, she's like, I can't fight this person. You're not playing by the rules. So it's so good.
The only weird thing, and I'll say this is my only damn, there was a really weird POV shot in that battle that felt so out of place because I don't think it had ever been done in Game of Thrones before that or since. And it felt just very odd. There was in that battle, Arya, all of a sudden we get a POV shot of Brienne looking down at Arya.
And I saw that.
And Arya's kind of like doing a bit of that.
It's when she not, and she does. That is weird.
It's almost, I'd wager, I can't think of another time a Game of Thrones character or actor stares down the lens, like directly breaks the fourth wall. Very weird. It just felt totally out of place for Game of Thrones.
Really, yeah, that is interesting. I remember that. Weird. I love all of this. The action being back at Winterfell is really great. All of the drama is really north. Even though we go to King's Landing in this episode, this is the point in the show where Cersei starts to really struggle because there's not really anyone for her to bounce off of. And there's much conflict down there.
Yeah, and that was the next scene. So then we head over to King's Landing with Cersei talking to Tycho Nestoris, obviously Mark Gatiss, who runs the Iron Bank, or at least regional manager, assistant to the regional manager.
Something like that.
So Cersei, Take me through this because so they're repaying. So he's surprised that they're repaying this gargantuan loan. In your mind, how much do they owe? What is that? What is on that?
In real terms,
if Cersei was like, "Fucking hell, I've got to pay Monzo back,"
I think it's like £5 million.
You think it's that little? Nah.
Yeah, because I mean,
this is the crown. This is
But they don't have our economy, so it wouldn't be like.
No. I thought it was going to be like the equivalent of a couple of bill at least, but maybe I've just been watching.
I suppose if we're talking about what's the equivalent, I guess that's true.
Enough for the Iron Bank to be slightly kind of like, because he says, oh, you know, I can't believe you're paying it back this early. We were enjoying the interest rate payments.
It's very Klarna, isn't it? Like, exactly. You've only done it in two installments. We thought you'd do it over 2 years.
Yeah.
So in the last episode, which we didn't obviously cover, there was this double invasion. Daenerys's team storm Casterly Rock.
Yeah.
The Lannisters attack Highgarden. Highgarden, as we know, is like all the grain, they control all the, like, harvesting.
They're like the Ukraine of the world.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. So, I just want to talk about it quickly because it's quite a good reference point to season one, is that Daenerys and Tyrion and everyone say, look, Casterly Rock, we'll attack it because it's on the coast. We'll go in and the Lannisters anticipate this and they move all their forces to Highgarden so that when they go to the Casterly Rock, there's no one there.
Yeah.
They take it over really quickly. Euron's fleet blow up all the ships and get them stuck. Meanwhile, Olenna Tyrell gets poisoned. They ransack Highgarden. And just for ease of reference, I haven't got a map here, but they're kind of, imagine them as kind of opposite ends of a very narrow, you know, so they've got the road connecting them. And that is a reference to season one when they capture Jaime Lannister, when Rob captures Jaime. They trick the Lannisters into thinking they're going to attack Tywin's army, but they actually only send 2,000 people. So Tywin's army send everyone, and then Jaime gets attacked by Rob's forces. So Jaime says to Olenna, I lost to Rob Stark, but I learned from it, and I've done the same thing to Daenerys.
Good knowledge. So there we go. That's why that's Chris Maddle's on this podcast.
They come back. They're going on the, I think it's called the Rose Road, which is the one that connects Highgarden to King's Landing or to the King's Road or something like that. So they've got this loot train, as it's known.
Yes. Okay.
And they pretty much get the gold in. That's what they say to, I think it's Sam Tarly's father, Randall Tarly, says, most of the gold is in King's Landing. The rest of it is like, and it is like thousands and thousands of wagons, you know. It's a long, long journey back. So so that's how Cersei pays off her loan, is that they've, you know,
but then immediately pays off the loan and then asks for another one to because she wants to get the Golden Company on board.
Because again, she hasn't got the one thing that is sort of becoming clear is that, like, there's so few people anymore. So many families have gone, so many people have just gone twins. She's having to buy people in from Essos.
Just bulking up. That's a running theme throughout this, because the Tarlys, you know, as when Tyrion's pleading a bit later on to Sam Tarly and the son just going, don't, you're a great house, this is going to be the end of you, and you know, there aren't many houses left, and you know, it is again kind of like we're in this whirlpool heading towards the battle and the Long Night, and it's condensing all of the characters down there, isn't it?
And then he says to Daenerys, at least send them to the wall. At least, it just seems crazy eviscerating more and more people, that you're going to rule over nothing if you carry on like this. Cersei has to buy an army because there's just so few people left, and it's just the whole country is just kind of ravaged by this really prolonged war. But as soon as she clears the debt, the bank says, hey...
Which is a bit of an unnecessary plot point. It's a bit of a MacGuffin, that one, because Cersei could go, well, actually, I'll keep paying your interest and I'll just go and buy the Golden Company now with the money I've got from the train. True. It was a weird Jeopardy plot point where it's just like, gotta get that train, you know.
Mm. Yeah, and on the first watch, I thought Daenerys stole loads of gold as well. There was literally a line where they go, all the gold is in the city now. Which is kind of useful, but you know, some things you do forget after watching them. And over to Dragonstone. We go over to Dragonstone briefly. So again, I think like Daenerys has lost Highgarden, the Tullys. In the episodes that we haven't watched, the Dornish, the Sand Snakes get captured.
Oh no!
Theon's sister gets captured, and after starting season 7 in a strong position, she's lost 3 key allies, and that's kind of she's really fucked off with Tyrion. She thinks he's giving him bad advice, and I do love the drama with all these characters. The alliance is not that strong. They don't trust each other. There's a lot of, like, you know,
it is interesting watching it back, because you know, it was like, oh, she just went fucking mad and she was just a nightmare, and she did, you know, on paper, like you just say, she's lost this ally this ally. Tyrion is not as he's still a great hand of the queen. He still is, but it's not what she wants to hear. That's the slight madness in her, that she's not listening to sense anymore. Having said that, she's not going... She isn't. Her options are drying up a bit. You know, her only option in many places is to kind of like go, well, fuck it. What else have I got to lose? May as well just breathe fire on everyone.
Yeah. I think one of the things the show does a bad job of communicating is that, like, even if Ilaria Sand has been captured... someone else would be running House Martell.
Yeah.
They'd still got the armies. There are still tens of thousands of people. Same with Highgarden. The same with some of the Ironborn. Daenerys still, in theory, has a lot of people, but because we don't have people leading those armies, the show sort of says to us, they've gone.
Yeah.
And it's sort of kind of not true. And I do think, like, it's very easy for me to say this, but, like, watching it back, you're sort of like, you know, Daenerys doesn't campaign. She doesn't go to Dorne to meet all these people. She doesn't go and like amass the army. She doesn't deploy lieutenants and captains. And she actually does seem to have a good amount of supporters.
Yeah.
But I think the show needs us, yeah, to feel like she is on the back foot. So essentially, she's lost loads of support.
She's fucked.
Which forces her into this feeling, which, as you said, it doesn't feel that it's not a reach anymore. Like, we actually see where she goes in the show. We can see it a mile off here. She goes into dragon mode because Olenna says to her earlier in the season, you are a dragon, you should start acting like one.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be this, like, inspiring moment. And it's like, no, that's terrible advice from an old woman who knows she's going to die soon. Like, that's terrible advice. And you mentioned it. The Tyrion says to her, like, we've got to have a strategy. She's like, I'm going to just go and do it myself. But Jon says the same thing, doesn't he? Jon says, people believe in you. You stand for something. But if you melt all the castles, they won't believe you stand for anything that benefits them. And that is what happens. So fair play to them. It's communicated what's gonna go wrong, or like how susceptible she is to just going batshit.
And there are some smaller moments leading up to, before we get into the Reach, there was, I enjoyed, you know, a little light relief from, it's like Daenerys and Missandei having a bit of like, oh, did you fuck him? Well, no, because he hasn't got a cock, so what did you? Yeah, it's like fingers and tops, you know, it's that kind of thing that was going on there. And then one of my favourite moments, which was the, was Jon with, was it Viserion? Which dragon was it? It was Drogon. Oh. It would have been Drogon, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have been Drogon, yeah.
I enjoyed that moment a lot.
There's a lot of hints, isn't there? That with the dragons.
I mean, that kind of gave it away, really.
Yeah.
You know, and knowing what we know from House of Dragon about, we know more a bit about the folklore of owning a dragon and stuff. The fact that Jon, they had that staring moment where, which was referenced, which we obviously learned about in House of the Dragon. I really enjoyed that. And Daenerys' like face was just like, hang on a sec, what the fuck? He doesn't like anyone. And
It is a bit like seeing, you know, if you bring like a boyfriend home and they get on really well with the family dog, you're like,
yeah, it's like, oh,
okay,
this is interesting.
Maybe keep you around for
maybe
a bit.
Maybe I will bang him. Yeah,
Fido never wags his tail
exactly
to my boyfriends.
It's going to go off in the corner and hump a blanket. Yeah,
this is unusual. This is there's lots of moments where, I mean, I wouldn't say it was like a standout moment, but even just Jon and Missandei, Davos and Jon talking about bastards and status, and you know, they say like, look, she freed you, like why do you still work for her? And she's like, I choose to, like we all believe in her. Was a good thing to have in, because I think it's important to remember that like people really believe in her, and to some extent none of them are counselling her. Like, no one's like, you shouldn't do that. Because sticking to her... And it's interesting, because I just look back at, like, her destroying Slaver's Bay, and I'm like, I know I cheered, but it was really badly done. It's all a bit of a disaster. Like, we're supposed to see her as, like, liberating people, but, like, she just fucks off at the end. So it's very complicated. Like, you realise how futile the whole thing is, and that they don't love her. In Westeros. They certainly don't at the moment.
And then we head over to the Reach for a great action sequence.
Yeah.
It was great. It was,
and like
it was
way better than I remember. I remember it was amazing. But it,
and I mean, it's like a Western. It's Game of Thrones does cowboys and Indians. It was great.
So it's kind of a surprise. They don't expect the horde of Dothraki. They don't expect the dragon. And Daenerys blows up all the loot that isn't already in King's Landing, which is mainly grain and supplies. It is like...
She decimates the gold, right?
Well, I thought the gold got into King's Landing. I thought that's what Randall Tarly said.
The last of the gold is in.
We just need to get the back of the train.
Right, okay.
Gotcha. I think that's the thing that's sort of ironic, is that like everyone does kind of need that grain for like the destructive winter that's about to come, and she's just like, boom.
No, fuck it.
But that scene where all the Dothraki come over the horizon is incredible.
Yeah.
Because we've never we've been promised this for since season one. Like, what would it look like if the Dothraki invade? Like, they are brutal warlords.
Yeah.
And they smash apart the soldiers, don't they?
Yeah, oh, just obliterated them. There was just, you can't, you know, you saw all the soldiers, like, with their shields and their spears, all doing tactical kind of, like, interlocking and preparing themselves for this and that. And actually, when you're faced with, like, I don't know, what, 10,000 lunatics on horses with machetes and eyeshadow, you're fucked, you know, because they'll just plow through you. You know, you cannot, and it's the same, but that's Daenerys's battle technique full stop. It's like, come up with any tactics you like. I can just hit you harder and faster than anything else. It doesn't, nothing you can come up with can account for brute force. She is just brute force through and through.
And even like the way that, you know, the Dothraki, like a lot of the horses get impaled on the spears, and there's one shot where the guy just leapfrogs over his horse.
Yeah.
You know, it's like even their horses, which are like, they fucking love horses. Like, they sleep in stables with their horses. The Dothraki fucking love horses. Even that, it's just like, you know, just brutal. Like, horses are gone now. It's just like, it's crazy. There was like a horse that's like on fire at one point. It's just like Black Beauty, like flashbacks of like...
Yeah,
you know,
we see a horse lose a leg, don't we? Is that bronze horse? I think it was bronze.
Oh, yeah. The Dothraki that's chasing him cuts the horse's leg off.
Yeah. Don't like horses that much, do they?
Astonishing, yeah. But the whole, it's just, and obviously Drogon comes over, torches things, and it's this fire and smoke, and there's one amazing shot sort of mid towards the final bit of the battle where we're watching Bronn run to get the scorpion, which is the big crossbow.
Kyber.
Which I love that they thought, we should take that to Highgarden
just in case.
I know it takes 19 people to drag it with their, you know, hands.
Yeah.
But we should just take that.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
So anyway, Bronn is running towards it and the dragon flies over him really low and it literally looks like an aeroplane is about to crash. It was so good.
It's a great moment. I loved it. The scorpion was brilliant. I think, was there an homage to Jaws in there? There's the bit where Bronn is got the scorpion, he's got it loaded, and he's like, "Where are you? Come here." He says, like, "Come on, then, you fucker," or something like that. it's like a reference to Chief Brody in Jaws, where he goes, "Smiley son of a bitch," where it's just like,
Rifle,
and it's charging to the shark's coming towards him with the oxygen tank. Oh, spoiler, oxygen tank in its mouth, and he's like, "Smile, you son of a bitch." I thought there was like a little moment there, and I loved the one thing I do think is kind of like, is how realistic is that? Is like where like Tyrion's like just wanders up and he's like, he spies, like he can just see what's going on. He's like, "There's my brother. There's Daenerys Bronn, looking a bit." He's like, and he's just like, "Oh, flee!" What did he say? "Flee, you fucking idiot!" He's like,
"Don't mind me, guys. Just gonna have some thoughts."
Yeah.
Why would you send him there? Like,
I mean, you just like, get the fuck out of the way, mate. It's like, just.
I guess he probably was saying to Daenerys, like, "If you're gonna go, I'm coming with you."
Yeah, I'm the hand of the queen, I suppose. Yeah, but, fair enough.
Yeah, it's so funny, like. Jaime sees Tyrion, Tyrion sees Jaime. Like, it's all very, like... It's almost kind of like they couldn't wait until their eventual reunion, so they sort of put that in there. I think it would have been better if they hadn't
done it. Although it did... I mean, that particular sequence, what it did do was make us realise what Jaime was planning on doing, which would have been quite difficult to frame. Yes. That kind of, like... Again, a weird POV. There was a bit of POV there as well, where you were like, you saw what Tyrion was looking at, which was Jaime kind of like starting to gallop and picking up the spear towards Daenerys. And then he looked over towards her kind of pulling the scorpion thing out of Drogon.
Yeah.
It was a great shot. One of the great shots was like Daenerys almost like, I'm fucked. Drogon's head just appearing in front of that, opening up. And then Bronn just brilliant. It was like Indiana Jones.
It was really high octane. And again, I think when I watched it the first time, I was like, "Oh, how stupid!" And actually, completely take it back. It's really good television.
It is. It is really a dumb action sequence, but it's brilliant. It's like, yeah. It was just hijinks.
Because I think actually what I got was just the sheer like hopelessness that Jamie is like, my army's gone. And he's also, like,
there is nothing I can do about this dragon. You know, it's the fact that the bodies were immediately just ash. It was like seeing the bodies of Pompeii where you just see people like just.
Yeah. There's a scene where one of the horses runs through a torched soldier and he just falls, it turns into dust immediately. It's like a dandelion, you know, and you blow, it just goes like that. And it, you know, it's just shocking. So Jamie's theory is, look, I killed the Mad King. I can kill his daughter.
Yeah.
And even if, and I'm probably not going to get out of this alive, I have to do this.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I am the Kingslayer. Yeah.
Yeah. Bronn is like, got to get you out of the way. And he does. Jamie's, I mean, that is the deepest lake I've ever seen, also.
It was a naff. I'm going to say a bit of a cheap cliffhanger.
I think also what I noticed was, God, that is the, if you have got a golden arm, that is the worst scenario where you're like, oh my God, I'm literally sinking.
Oh, shit.
It was really bad. Yeah.
And the armor. It's like, my God.
And the armor. If I was Daenerys, I'd have got that dragon to just boil the water alive.
Exactly,
and just
give him a Turkish bath to death.
Just poach him, you know. But yeah, it was astonishing. And I think it was really smart getting a good victory in, because this is what we wanted to see this whole time.
Yeah.
And I think the subsequent episodes, invasions are a little bit, they're to such an extreme that we had to get this, it's not quite tactical, but just something a little enticing, like this is the firepower, this is what she's got.
Yeah,
but
well, it had also to happen in order to weaken Cersei to the point where she was just like, okay, let's just, okay, actually I don't want to fight you now because I'm going to fight the Night King now. It made the quest to go and fetch the White a kind of like a convenient kind of like pause for Cersei, wasn't it?
I do want to just repeat that I think it is the story North of the Wall is just the stupidest thing.
People have chosen this episode to be vindictive to you. You know that, don't you?
What I will say is when we cover it, I won't be a complete prick. Now, what I will also say, I want to get in front of this, the character interactions are great.
Yeah.
There's all these, you know, but it's just complete nonsense.
Yeah, plot point, it makes no sense. But it's Gendry, like, if this is a Western, you know, the Beyond the Wall episode that we're going to watch next is like the Magnificent Seven. It's like, it's that kind of like Roger Moore kind of army. What's the Bridge Over the River Kwai kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. It also just makes, it's, for me, it's very like, very Marvel, like very Guardians of the Galaxy. And that's fine because those guys are superheroes. But you've got Gendry, whose life experience is, I'm a bastard and I've made three helmets.
And I've been on a boat for 4 years. Yeah.
You should go north of the wall and capture a White.
Yeah.
Like anyway, I understand why they have to do it. I think it is really, really stupid. But I'm kind of looking forward to it. I think the bit where Gendry sends a raven to Daenerys to come and save them is just preposterous. And
you're jumping ahead of yourself.
I'm just getting it out of my system, because what I want to say is when we do next week,
you're going to be objective.
I can't be Captain Mona. So we'll be sort of, I'll be looking for things that I enjoy. And I think I want to get the stuff that doesn't work. I think we all know there's a lot of logic leaps. So it maybe isn't healthy to spend next week just going in on that. So I'll be going in with my, you know, compliment sandwich tucked under my arm.
A very pleasing episode of Game of Thrones. Slightly felt very tonally different to any of the ones we've watched on this rewatch so far, I think.
And I think these later episodes generally are more fun on a rewatch than a random episode from season
definitely.
Two.
Definitely. It felt like a capsule episode that had
they're really fun. I just was like, oh my God, it's so audacious and exciting. So, you know, that's something that I sort of forgot when we started doing this. Oh yeah, like, these episodes we've been watching, it's like, oh, I've got one piece of a 10-piece puzzle and then I'm not going to finish it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Looking forward there we go. To next week.
We are a third of the way through season 7 already. Next week is episode 6, Beyond the Wall, which will be an interesting. Now, time for some correspondence. Thank you very much to everyone that's got in touch. Always appreciate anyone leaving a review. Lots of people leave us reviews, actually, on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. I'm sorry we don't... I didn't really kind of like respond to them because they're usually just like out and out praise, which is great. So thank you to anybody that does. If you haven't, do feel free. I know it's not an ask, you know, they're always, I don't know how the algorithm of Apple and all that stuff works, but I know that reviews, especially 5-star reviews, work really well.
Absolutely.
Steve Freeman got in touch. Thanks, Steve. Email dragoncast@deafdoris.com and said, love the pod. Thanks, Steve. With many good ones, has a lot to do with the chemistry of the people on it. And you two are great in that respect. Hey, that's because we're great chums.
We are.
He said, this is a bit behind the curtain, but I always wonder who's hammering a keyboard in the background. I don't think it's either of you, but you can often hear it when someone's speaking. They mentioned like a bit where I went back and listened. Steve, it's me. Because what that is me frantically Googling something to make my argument, to add weight to my argument, to make me sound like I know things a lot more than I do. That's what
I wouldn't say I've ever heard you tapping away.
Well, he mentioned something. He said, for example, and he gave a time in an episode, and I went back and went, no, that's absolutely me trying to make myself sound clever.
I do it sometimes, but yeah. I try not to. I actually think, I try and do my research before.
Yeah, I don't. I'm far too late.
Yeah, because I feel like we're not encyclopedias. You know, we're people, and people don't expect us to know everything,
Except when they do. Tracy Goodwin Bristow emailed in. Just wanted to say thanks for the podcast that we do about Game of Thrones, House of Dragon, blah 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 blah. It's been fantastic. They then go on. And Tracy, the reason I'm bringing you up now is because they then go on to ask a question about Succession. Tracy, we'll answer that question on next Monday when we've watched episode 4, because you've got a really, really good theory. Really good theory. Which she'll know what it is. We'll bring it up on Monday. Obviously no spoilers. Elena Sharp. Hello, Elena. Love you both talking about Game of Thrones. We're both so funny. Other podcasts can't compete. I mean, who are we to argue with that?
Finally, someone said it.
She rewatches Game of Thrones every year. She's done a rewatch a dozen times now. That is fucking impressive, Elena.
How many episodes are there? Like 72?
73 episodes.
So that's more than one a week. That's more than once a week every year.
In perpetuity.
Constant. That's like that painting that, which is that bridge. Is it in America? By the time they finish painting.
Oh, the fourth bridge. Yeah, you start at the end, you've got to go back and start at the beginning. Yeah.
Gosh, what an undertaking.
They've said, please try and get a Game of Thrones convention going. There's nothing more I want in the world than a room filled with Game of Thrones people. This is our new mission. It's a mission that I'm going to decline gracefully. I think, Elena, that's a live convention. I think they did try. I was booked to go and appear or open or speak at one in Canada a couple of years ago that never got off the ground. I think mainly because, well, my theory is because the thing that makes conventions proper is having cast there, and I don't think enough times. I think people are judging by the reaction that we've seen from people like John Bradley or Gwendolyn or Amelia or Kit Harington, where they're asked about House of the Dragon, they've gone, I can't watch it, it's too soon. You know, I think that says everything. It's like, for them to then go back and to do a Game of Thrones convention, I think it'll happen eventually. Like we see Star Wars celebrations that happened the previous weekend, and they get kind of like Ewan McGregor happily turns up with Hayden Christensen, Gwendolyn Christie turned up at that one. I think it will happen. I think not yet, and it probably won't be organised by me, I can tell you that much. Here we go. So a couple of good morning, Dragoncast. This is Stephen Connor. Thanks, Stephen. This is about... hang on a sec. I think I've talked about this one. Sorry, I beg your pardon. I'll cut that bit out. So there we go. Do get in touch if you want to get in touch at dragoncast_pod on the old Twitters, or indeed just email at dragoncast@daftdoris.com. Really, really appreciate it. Until next time, we will be recording an OAA episode. Whether or not we do that now, I'm not sure. We've not discussed it. It feels like maybe a bit much considering this has been an over an hour's episode. But we will finally put the OA to bed.
We will.
Because we're doing it a disservice. But until the next episode, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back on Monday with Sound of Succession. We'll be back on Tuesday or Wednesday with Dragon Cat with Game of Thrones Rewatch Season 7, Episode 6. Chris, Dracarys, my friend.
Dracarys.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@DaffDoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daff Doris production. Dracarys.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.